All right, get ready to dive into a world of gothic mystery and southern folklore. You sent over these excerpts from Ava Reed's A Study in Drowning, and wow, I'm already hooked just from these.
Yeah, there's so much atmosphere and intrigue packed into just these little snippets. It's easy to see why you'd want to unravel the whole story.
Oh, absolutely. And that's exactly what we're going to try to do today, navigate these murky waters without, giving away any major spoilers, just enough to pique your curiosity and leave you wanting more. So where do we even begin with a story like this?
Well, I think a good starting point is with Effie, our protagonist. You can sense right from the beginning that she's yearning for something more, something beyond her architecture studies at this prestigious university in Lear. Her fascination with Imre Myrdin, Lear's celebrated author, it hints at a quest for truth that goes way deeper than the surface.
Yeah, for sure. And the way she just jumps at this chance to redesign Myrdin's former home, Hyrieth Manor, it's like she's being pulled towards it by some invisible force. It's not just an academic project for her, it's something much deeper.
Absolutely. And then there's the setting itself, Hyrieth Manor, perched right on the edge of a cliff in a region called the Bottom Hundred, a place haunted by a devastating event they call the Drowning. You can just feel the weight of history and mystery, clinging to the walls of that house.
It's like the setting is a character itself, full of secrets and whispers of the past.
Yeah.
And speaking of secrets, let's talk about the other people living at Hyrieth Manor. We have Preston, a literature student and a Myrdin scholar. He seems to be just as drawn to the mysteries of the house as Effie is.
But their relationship, it's definitely not simple. There's this immediate tension between them, a clash of personalities, and maybe even a hint of rivalry, And don't forget, Preston is Argantean, so a citizen of a nation that's currently at war with Lear. Talk about adding another layer of complexity, huh?
Yeah, it definitely raises questions about his motives, right? Like, is he really there to uncover the truth about Myrdin, or is there something else going on? And then there's Eäontor Myrdin, Imre's son, the one who hired Effie for this whole redesign thing. There's just something great off about him, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. He's eccentric, enigmatic, and honestly, he just gets more and more unsettling as the story unfolds. That connection he has to the house, his almost obsessive devotion to his father's legacy, it makes you wonder what he might be hiding, what truths he's trying so hard to protect.
It's like he's this puzzle box, and every time you think you're about to unlock it, another layer of mystery pops up. And then there are these subtle hints of southern folklore woven into the narrative, specifically the legend of the Fairy King. This figure, often associated with drowning and enchantment, just kind of casts a shadow over the whole story.
It's really interesting how Reed uses those elements of folklore to create this atmosphere of creeping dread. The Fairy King is more than just a mythical being. He's a symbol of something primal, something lurking beneath the surface, waiting to be unleashed.
And it makes you wonder, right, if he's more than just a legend, especially when you consider Effie's past trauma involving this mythical being. It's like a seed of doubt has been planted, blurring the lines between reality and folklore.
Exactly. And that ambiguity is a huge part of what makes this story so compelling. You're never quite sure what's real and what's imagined, what's just Effie's anxieties, and what might actually be some kind of supernatural force at play.
Okay, so we've got this atmospheric setting, these intriguing characters, and this underlying sense of mystery and dread. So, what could possibly make things even more complicated?
Well, how about the discovery of Imre's Myrdin's hidden diary and photographs? These things are tucked away in the walls of Hyrieth Manor, and they suggest that there's a darker side to this celebrated author, a side that contradicts his carefully constructed public image.
Wow, it's like you're peeling back the layers of a myth and finding something totally unexpected, right?
Yeah.
Something that challenges everything you thought you knew about this literary icon. And it makes you think about the nature of truth, about the stories we tell ourselves and the ones we choose to believe.
And then there's this trip that Effie and Preston take to Penrose, the home of another famous author, Colin Blackmar, who is supposedly friends with Myrdin. It seems like they're on a quest for answers, trying to piece together the fragments of Myrdin's past. But what they find there is, well, more unsettling than enlightening.
Especially that whole encounter with Blackmar's associate, Marlowe. I won't say too much, but that scene is just dripping with unease and foreboding, like stepping into a den of vipers.
The tension is definitely ratcheting up at this point. You can feel the walls closing in, the sense that they're venturing deeper into this labyrinth of secrets and lies, and there's no guarantee they're coming out unscathed.
Exactly. And just when you think it can't get any more intense, this massive storm descends upon Hyrieth, mirroring the region's history of flooding and that ominous event, the drowning. It's like the past is literally crashing into the present, threatening to engulf everything.
Yeah, the storm becomes this incredibly powerful symbol of all the forces at play, you know, both internal and external. It reflects the turmoil that Effie and Preston are going through as they grapple with their own anxieties and the increasingly unsettling truths that they're uncovering.
And you know what? The excerpts you shared end on such a cliffhanger. This confrontation with Ianto during the storm, it leaves you breathless, wanting to know what happens next. Mm. Does Ianto succumb to whatever darkness seems to be plaguing him? Do Effie and Preston survive the storm and escape Hyrath with the truth they've been searching for?
Well, I guess we'll have to wait for part two of this deep dive to find out. But for now, I think we've given you a taste of the intrigue and atmosphere that awaits you in A Study in Drowning.
Hopefully we've piqued your curiosity without spoiling any of the major surprises.
Definitely. I think it's safe to say that Ava Reed has created a story that's going to stay with you long after you finish reading it. Picking up where we left off, that storm raging around Hyrath Manor, you know, it becomes more than just a force of nature. It's like this catalyst pushing the characters to their limits, exposing those raw and vulnerable truths beneath the surface.
Yeah. Definitely. It's like the storm rips away any pretense, forcing Effie and Preston to confront not just the external dangers, but also their own inner demons.
And speaking of demons, let's go back to that confrontation with Ianto during the storm. That revelation about him chaining up the mountain ash trees surrounding the house, you know, the trees that are supposed to ward off evil spirits, it really adds a whole new dimension to his character, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. It's not just that he's eccentric or unreliable. He's actively trying to contain something, something he sees as a threat. It makes you wonder what he knows that he's not telling, what darkness he's so desperately trying to keep away.
Yeah, like the house itself is a prison, not just for Effie and Preston, but for Ianto too. You know, trapped by his father's legacy, by the secrets of Hyrath Manor, and maybe even something more sinister.
And then there's that lingering question about the Fairy King. Remember how we talked about the Southern folklore and how it's woven into the story? Well, let's just say those whispers of folklore, they become a lot more tangible in this part of the story.
It's as if the storm has torn open that veil between the real and the supernatural, allowing those ancient beliefs to seep into the present. And Effie, with her past trauma involving the Fairy King, she becomes the focal point for this intrusion.
It's interesting how her initial skepticism, you know, that struggle to reconcile her rational mind with all the strange things happening around her, it slowly gives way to this chilling realization that she might actually be dealing with something otherworldly.
Her journey becomes a battle for sanity, a desperate attempt to hold on to herself in the face of a force that seems determined to, like, completely unravel her. And those hagstones she got from the shepherd, those seemingly insignificant trinkets, they take on a whole new meaning as she clings to them for protection and grounding.
They become a symbol of her resistance, right? Like her connection to this ancient wisdom and the power of folklore in a world that's becoming harder and harder to understand.
Right. And then you have Preston trying to make sense of it all through logic and reason. His skepticism, which was initially a source of tension between them, actually becomes a lifeline for Effie as she navigates those increasingly blurred lines between reality and myth.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating dynamic. You've got Effie drawn to the mysteries of Hyrath Manor and becoming more and more susceptible to these supernatural forces. And then there's Preston trying to anchor her to the rational world, even as his own beliefs are being challenged by what's happening around him.
It's like a dance, a subtle dance of attraction and vulnerability. This recognition that they're both struggling to come to terms with the darkness they've found, both within themselves and within the walls of that house.
And speaking of darkness, remember that trip to Penrith to meet with Colin Blackmore and learn more about Emrys Myrddin? Well, let's just say that journey takes a bit of an unexpected turn, revealing some pretty uncomfortable truths about Myrddin's past and his relationship with Blackmore's daughter.
Yeah, that whole question of who wrote Angerod, it gets even more confusing. The discovery of those letters between Myrddin and Blackmore's daughter, letters with passages that mirror those found in Myrddin's famous novel, it really throws everything into question.
It makes you think about authorship, you know,
about
inspiration and plagiarism. That blurry line between fact and fiction. Did Myrddin actually steal Blackmore's daughter's words? Or was there a deeper collaboration, a shared creative vision that got twisted over time?
It's a question that hangs over the rest of the story, casting the shadow of doubt over Myrddin's legacy and forcing us to, like, reevaluate our perceptions of the celebrated author. And let's not forget about Blackmar's associate, Marlowe, that unsettling figure who just oozes menace and seems to be pulling all the strings from behind the scenes.
He's definitely a character that sets off alarm bells. A reminder that the dangers in A Study in Drowning, they extend beyond just Hyraith Manor, right? They reach out into the wider literary world.
A world of ambition, jealousy, and the ruthless pursuit of fame, where the truth is often sacrificed for artistic success.
And if Effie and Preston dig deeper into these secrets, they realize that the truth they're looking for, it might come with a very heavy price.
Meanwhile, the storm, it keeps raging, mirroring that internal turmoil the characters are facing and that sense of impending doom that hangs over everything.
It becomes a ticking clock, doesn't it? This reminder that time is running out, that they need to make a choice. Do they stay and try to salvage something from the wreckage, or do they run and risk being consumed by the secrets they've uncovered?
And that's where we'll leave you for now. The storm is reaching its peak. The tension is almost unbearable. And the fate of Effie, Preston, and Ianto, it's hanging in the balance.
But don't worry, we'll be back to dive back into those turbulent waters in part three, where we'll explore that shocking climax and unravel the final threads of this captivating mystery. All right, so we made it through some pretty treacherous storms, you know, both literal and metaphorical. We've uncovered some unsettling truths about Emery's Myrdan, but I feel like the real core of A Study in Drowning lies in what it all means.
I think you're right. You know, we've skirted around the edges of some pretty profound themes like truth, illusion, the weight of legacy. I think now's the time to really dive into the heart of it all.
Okay, so let's start with truth, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a word that keeps coming up around Effie's journey, but what does it actually mean in this context?
Well, it's not just about finding facts or, you know, historical details. It's about facing the narratives that we create, the stories we tell ourselves, and how those stories can be manipulated.
You're talking about Myrdan's legacy, right? How his public image, so carefully crafted, clashes with those darker truths that come out in his hidden writings. It's like peeling back the layers of a myth and finding something that doesn't fit, something that really challenges how we see heroism and artistic genius.
Exactly. And it makes you ask those tough questions, right? Like, do you reject the art because of the artist's flaws? Or can you hold both the beauty and the ugliness in your understanding?
That's a question that goes way beyond this book, I think. It makes you think about all those historical figures we admire, you know?
Yeah.
The stories we hold on to, and all those complexities that get brushed aside just to make a simpler narrative.
And then there's that theme of female agency, or really, the lack of it. Think about what Effie goes through at the university. The whispers, the rumors that follow her, the subtle ways she's harassed. It reflects a society that tries to silence women, to control their stories, to limit their choices.
And then you have Angerod, the woman Myrdan wrote about in his famous novel. As we learn more about her life, her relationship with Myrdan, you start to see her not just as a muse, but as a woman trapped by the expectations of her time, silenced by her husband's fame, robbed of her own voice and agency.
It's such a heartbreaking parallel to Effie's struggles, you know? It reminds you that the fight for recognition and autonomy, it's still going on. And then there's the Fairy King, this figure, who seems to embody those forces that want to control and manipulate. He preys on women, lures them into his web of enchantment, and ultimately strips them of their agency.
Yeah, it's like he represents this primal fear, right? A darkness lurking beneath the surface of society, just waiting to exploit any vulnerability, any crack in the facade of control.
And Effie's past trauma, her own experience with the Fairy King, it adds another dimension to all of this. It's not just some random plot point. It's a manifestation of those deep-seated fears, those societal pressures that can haunt women throughout their lives.
But it's also about overcoming those fears, right?
Oh, God,
about taking back your power, about refusing to let the past define you.
Exactly. And that's where the story really becomes about resilience, about the power of self-discovery, the strength of the human spirit.
And let's not forget about the power of storytelling itself. It's not just the background of this mystery. It's a driving force. The way Myrdan twists his own narrative, the way his words shape perceptions and influence people, it reminds us how powerful stories can be.
And how dangerous that power can be, too. Think about how easily we can be drawn in by a good story, how readily we accept what we're told, especially when it confirms what we already believe, you know?
It's a cautionary tale, in a way. It encourages us to think critically about the information we're given, to question the narratives we're presented with, to seek out different perspectives, and to understand that every story, every single one, has the potential to manipulate.
And the ending, well, I won't spoil anything, but it's both satisfying and thought-provoking. It leaves you with this sense of hope, the belief that even when faced with darkness and despair, we have the power to choose our own ending, to rewrite our own story, and to find redemption in the most unexpected places.
That's what really sticks with me about A Study in Drowning. It's a story that stays with you. It's a story that makes you think critically about the world, about the narratives we build, and the truths we decide to embrace.
It invites you to ask questions, to explore, and to ultimately find your own meaning in its depths.
So, to our listeners, we hope this deep dive has sparked your curiosity and maybe inspired you to dive into a study in drowning yourselves.
It's a book that will reward your attention, challenge your assumptions, and leave you thinking about it long after you've finished reading.
And until next time, happy reading.